Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. I believe it goes without saying that the previous episode, the marketing, what I talking about the Bolshevik Revolution and what the heck's going on here, helping you understand that this has been a process that has been in motion for a long time. The point of marketing shows, and I ran out of time, but the point of that yesterday's show was to prove to you that we have been in this throes of moving towards communism for a long time. As a matter of fact, people like the John Birch Society recognized that this movement was real and a present danger. W. Cleon Skousen, who wasn't a part of the John Birch Society, W. Cleon Skousen identified the goals of communism in his Naked Communist book. He warned America and pointed to their 45 goals. And if you look at, you know, what was going on at that point in time, and I'm just doing, you know, kind of closing on yesterday's show, because without really having, you know, the detail. Anyway, the point is that even though W. Cleon Skousen did this work, even though the John Birch Society was founded, it doesn't seem like we have had true, meaningful resistance and actually reversing the direction that this country was pushed down. In other words, this has been the communist infiltration in America had begun a lot earlier. Most people started recognizing this, that the so much damage was already done, that they were already in the subfloor. They were already in positions to, you know, hardened positions that we just, until people started really looking at the only process and a solution. And in all honesty, I look at this and I point to the fact that we were constrained. It wasn't until the advent of the internet where anybody could get access to all sorts of great information and knowledge. It's how I became informed, and it's how I started reading documents that were not available to the average person previously until the internet, such as the ratification debates. I didn't have to go to a very specific library which might have some of these things, and there were very few. This is one of the reasons why the University of Wisconsin started creating they created the DHRC, the documentary history of the ratification of the U.S. Constitution. And so my point is that what is it going to take to wake you up? What is it going to take to get you to understand we are in the final throes? Very similar to what we see going on if you look historically, as I was talking about the Russian Revolution, what happened in 1917. Those are the final pages that they were executing this plan of implementing communism in Russia to create the Soviet Union. If you don't get motivated, and some of the best ways you can get motivated and getting involved is by becoming a part of the solution, by helping people understand that Republic Review is the only process that will get the federal, and I'm serious. People say, oh, well, you got to do this. And I go, yeah, but if you do not do Republic Review, if we do not implement the audit and have the states force the federal government into compliance, all will be lost. Period. Oh, well, some people, we got to have the national repentance. We've got to pray. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't be praying for those types of things, But I truly believe that we cannot repent and we cannot make appeals to the divine hand of providence until we get government out of the way, who is directly coming after and targeting those of us who are actually trying to fight them and trying to implement this restoration or the reclaiming of the republic. So, what's it going to take? As you see, they use these deaths, whether they be staged or real or what have you, and whatever level of manipulation is going on in the background, because, the CIA doesn't do these types of things. The government doesn't do these types of things. Not in America. they do it all over the world. And these progressives love to point the finger at the evil, something happens within the boundaries of the United States. They don't do anything because that would be bad, and they're good people. No, these progressives and all of these people that point to the CIA is doing damage to inflicted syphilis on the blacks. Oh, but that was it. No, they're not doing other things. Are you kidding me? Really? They have no boundaries. And if you haven't recognized the level and magnitude of the deep state, then I'm just wasting my time. If you haven't recognized this, that we have to get involved. We have to get organized and we have to get united, period. We're running out of time. So today's document we're going to dive into is Madison's veto of the Federal Public Works Bill. And actually, it was called an act to set apart and pledge certain funds for internal improvements for constructing roads and canals and improving the navigation of water courses in order to facilitate, promote, and give security to internal commerce among the several states and render more easy and less expensive the means and provisions for the common defense. In other words, if you really read that title, that sure sounds like they were trying to, go down this path of saying we are an unlimited government and we want to save money, so we're going to take states' powers to do this. So Madison, and I'm going to give you the backstory right now on this, because this is really good. Actually, there's one thing I forgot to do, and I almost forgot to do it. That the show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And this is the only academic-based evidence show to prove that the concept of Republic Review is the only. And as a matter of fact, this is not GR's concept. This is really Madison. This is really Jefferson. That's why we went through the resolutions, to prove that this is exactly what they tried to do in the first place. So don't trust me. Trust them. I'm the only. I'm this wretch of a man that is trying to help people understand what we need to do. We have to put aside our differences. We have to put aside our self-interests, and we have to unite. And any organization that's taking the position that they're not going to unite, that they're going to maintain their status quo, or they're going to embrace this or this, then they're a part of the problem. And if you're a member of that organization, I highly recommend you serve notice and say, I'm not going to be a part of you anymore. That's the hard part, because some of these organizations have some level of funding to be able to say, here's some money here. We're going to kind of keep you on the teat so that you can't wander too far. And that's how they control you, just the way the government controls. They're all using the same tactics. Anyway, the backstory here is Congress came to President Madison right before he was to retire at the end of 1816, the beginning of 1817, somewhere. There was this, and it was probably recorded somewhere. All I know is the story that his friends from Congress, the House specifically, came over and talked to him and said, hey, what can we do to create legislation to improve America before you leave. So this kind of be your hallmark legislation and, you know, helping America and so forth. And so Madison actually told them that the America, based on Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations, America could become the economic powerhouse if we had a way of improving our throughput of commerce, you know, our roadways, our waterways, how we were able to push and move and traverse the continent or the states at that time, raw goods from the source to refined and finished goods from the source back and forth. So he basically said, you know, what America really needs is we need the ability to be able to improve our highways, waterways, these other things so that we can do this. However, what he didn't tell them, what he failed to say is, hey, we need to, we need to amend the Constitution. We need to go to the states and get their approval to delegate to us powers to do this. Or at least if he said that, they completely ignored it. But there's nowhere in his writing that he says, hey, I told you that this is what you needed to do, and what you gave me was something different. So because of that, I honestly think that that was Madison's mistake. He didn't clearly articulate, hey, you need to go across the way and create an amendment to actually empower us. And I believe that was the divine hand of providence, because if you understand the powers that are assumed with the Department of Transportation, those powers have been used to support loyalists such as the Union and so forth in bad ways, that the federal government shouldn't have those powers. And so we'll be right back after this.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in, and let's get on with the dialogue. Well, needless to say, and I'm going to give you the front story, not just the back story. So Madison, you know, kind of asks Congress to give him this bill. He doesn't really tell them. And in all honesty, should he? Should a public servant tell fellow public servants who all should understand the magnitude of the oath of office that they've taken in supporting the Constitution, that they need to behave in a way that is supporting the Constitution and not rebelling against it. What Madison, I wish Madison would have included in the language, this is a rebellious bill. This bill goes outside the framework of the United States Constitution. And as public servants, we all have an obligation to abide by the processes and the powers, roles, and responsibilities that have been delegated to us. But he didn't do that either. And so the other thing that you also need to know is that Congress wasn't very happy with James Madison because he vetoed something that he asked for. And not only did he ask for it, he planted a seed in the mind of Congress, the collective mind of Congress, that here was a great opportunity to improve, for noble reasons, to improve the Republic, self-aggrandize their position between the federal government and the states, or the general government and the states, and, you know, be able to start doing things. And initially you think, well, okay, these things are kind of good, but actually in every way these things were bad. What the states should have done was the states should have started working together and saying, hey, we need to have an improvement. And if you guys want to bolster your economy, you need to improve your lines of communication, which is what we call highways and power lines and waterways, ways that commerce can travel and communication lines are open, whether it be the Pony Express or whether it be by literally telephone lines, fiber optics. I mean, lines of communication has taken on several different directions than, you know, they could even fathom, such as microwave towers, point-to-point communications, those types of things. But anyway, the point is that Congress was so upset with Mr. Madison as a framer and as the father of the Constitution, a man who deservingly, if anybody else deserved a monument and a memorial, Madison would have been one that deserved it. If you understand, and as a matter of fact, as a point in fact, I think it was mentioned before, as a point in fact, Madison was the only president to actually lead troops in fighting a war during his presidency. And so there's all sorts of reasons why, if there was anybody to be honored, you know, whether his face was on the bill, and every single one of these men felt that these things were repugnant, putting their faces on the currency or even having memorials and statues and so forth. They felt that that's not what America should be doing. Now, I'm not sitting here saying that we need to start dragging down all these monuments and so forth. If the people choose to do that, that's one thing. But the federal government should have never been doing it. There should be no monuments that are paid for and funded by the federal government. Where is that within the Constitution? It's not. But my point here is that look at what Congress designated as the memorial for James Madison, the father of the Constitution, all the great things he did. He was the one that created the concept of freedom of religion. Anyway, if you don't know, go look it up. The James Madison Memorial is the Library of Congress. What an insult, right? Oh, well, you know, here's a guy that was so goody-two-shoes and had to follow the Constitution and made it hard for us to usurp states' powers. Well, we're not going to remember that guy. We're going to try to make him as obscure as possible. And it's just amazing. I mean, I realize that Madison, one, is not getting the credit that he duly deserves, but more importantly, I also realize what he actually did and the magnitude of what he did, as well as Thomas Jefferson. Fact is, Thomas Jefferson was never in a position where he insulted Congress to that effect, because he was the consummate politician. But Madison was the consummate leader. He stuck to his principles and his morals, and he always stayed and stood on the high ground. So as he basically responded to to Congress's bill that I kind of just read you the title, this is exactly what he said. This is his veto statement to Congress. He says, to the House of Representatives, and by the way, this is March 3rd, 1817, and this is his final official act as President of the United States. If you want to say, here is a flag and a memorial for my service, here you go. I am standing on the ground of the Constitution and protecting it from federal tyranny. To the House of Representatives of the United States, having considered the bill this day presented to me entitled, quote, an act to set apart and pledge certain funds for internal improvements, close quote, and which sets apart and pledges funds for, quote, for constructing roads and canals and improving the navigation of watercourses in order to facilitate, promote, and give security to internal commerce among the several states, and to render more easy and less expensive the means of provisions for the common defense, unquote, or close quote. I am constrained, this is Madison again, I am constrained by the insuperable difficulty I feel in reconciling the bill with the Constitution of the United States to return it with that objection to the House of Representatives in which it originated. The legislative powers vested in Congress are specified and enumerated in the 8th section of the 1st article of the Constitution, and it does not appear that the power proposed to be exercised by the bill is among the enumerated powers, or that it fails by any just interpretation with the power to make laws unnecessary for carrying into execution those other powers vested by the Constitution of the Government of the United States. Boom, done. I mean, that was very short, concise, and to the point, but he didn't end there. And this is the most, this is why I pointed to Glenn Beck, why you need to really read this, because he actually reaches out to each of these clauses within the Constitution and says, hey, this is why you can't do this. The Supremacy Clause, the General Defense and Welfare Clause, which we kind of already touched on, or actually the Necessary and Proper Clause is what we already touched on. Now we're going to get into Commerce and the General Welfare, or the General Defense and Welfare Clauses. So this is what he says, quote, the power to regulate commerce among the several states, close quote, cannot include a power to construct roads and canals and improve the navigation of watercourses in order to facilitate, promote, and secure such commerce without a latitude of construction departing from the ordinary imports of the terms strengthened by the known inconveniences which doubtless led to the grant of this remedial power to Congress. In other words, that was a very long way of saying that you can't construe this concept of creating these roads and these waterways as a part to regulate commerce, to secure commerce, without actually violating how the Constitution was defined to the states at the time of ratification, because it was restricted to those powers and those powers only, and that the Commerce Clause was not a grand clause of being able to regulate every whit of commerce. Their job was to intercede and to be basically the referee between states to ensure that states could not conduct literally economic warfare amongst each other. Here's the problem. And this was Madison's, you know, if you look at Madison's point, this is where we can look at the Civil War, and what led up to the Civil War was literally states were committing economic warfare against the southern states that caused them to do that. Those states were wrong. What they should have done was, and they should have started moving, and they should have actually, you know, called for a movement of abolishing slavery. And they should have just called the Southern states out. But there were so many shenanigans from the Missouri Compromise to along with the gag order by Martin Van Buren in the Senate to where they couldn't even talk about slavery in the government. These were insidious problems that caused this whole delay in rectifying this wrong that Mason pointed out and many of the framers pointed out. Even Thomas Jefferson, James Monroe was the one that actually executed Jefferson's concept of repatriating blacks back to Africa, freemen, who they could actually give an opportunity of living life under their own means without having to live in a racially divided nation that was caused by Britain. This whole racial division has been a long-term implant from the British crown from the 1600s. Anyway, we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so as you can see, Madison already shuts down this concept that, and go look at all the rulings that the Supreme Court has used in tying the usurpation of power, such as the Wicker v. Filburn ruling in 1943, they use the Commerce Clause as their ability to do this. And Madison's saying they can't. They can't use that. That was a very specific power that was delegated to them as the referee, not the god of all commerce. And so the next thing that Madison goes into, and he starts talking about the general defense and general welfare. And he, so this is, you know, this is where he really just starts wailing on the pinata, so to speak, or this bill. And he says, to refer the power in question to the clause, quote, to provide for common defense and general welfare, close quote, would be contrary to the established and consistent rules of interpretation, as rendering the special and careful enumeration of powers which follow the clause nugatory and improper. I'm going to stop right there. They were very clear in stating during the ratification debates and even afterwards, Madison has been, I'm going to imagine at this point in time, this far beyond the ratification of the Constitution, Madison, while he was writing this, was blue in the face. He was so, I don't want to say exhausted, but straining so much to people, can you finally get this? That clause at the beginning of the enumerated powers is a preamble. It does not grant general powers. It is identifying what these following powers are to do, to basically to promote, and as a matter of fact, I'll just read it again, common defense and general welfare, to basically promote the common defense and general welfare of the states in a uniform fashion. These were not granting of general powers. And that's why Madison said, well, why did we even enlist powers beyond that? Because that's all we need. Then we now have a general power. But though that was not defined in any of the state ratification debates as a general power, it was defined as the intent of the subsequent following powers. This is, again, a preamble. Madison goes on and says this, it being expressly declared, quote, that the Constitution of the United States and laws made in pursuance thereof shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges of every state shall be bound thereby. Anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding. Folks, if you understand that Congress would then be able to take general powers and do what they will, it would take away the role of the court in determining whether the Constitution is being adhered to or not, because it would be left to Congress's discretion and not for Congress to operate within the defined parameters of those enumerated powers and not a general power. Madison goes on and says this, such a view of the Constitution finally would have an effect of excluding the judicial authority of the United States from participating in guarding the boundary between the legislative powers of the general and state governments. Inasmuch as questions relating to the general welfare, being questions of policy and expediency, are unsusceptible of judicial cognizance and decision. A restriction of the power, quote, to provide for the common defense and general welfare, close quote, to cases which are to be provided for by the expenditure of money would still leave within the legislative power of Congress all the great most important measures of government, money being the ordinary and necessary means of carrying them into execution. So Madison was completely wise of how and the path that Alexander Hamilton was going to use in trying to subvert our constitutional republic. So this is why Madison was taking such a hardcore stand and saying, you cannot do these things. The only way we can do these things is if we amend the Constitution. Anything else is a usurpation and a violation. And he actually gets into that. And friends, coming up is where Madison actually states what I believe is the most important statement of all. And that is where, even if you violate the Constitution, it will always be a violation of the compact. That eventually, if the states wake up, they can tear asunder these unconstitutional violations and throw them away and force the federal government back into compliance. And he says, this is a huge danger that you risk in doing this. But we will get to that. So Madison then goes on and says this. And remember, this is a one-page document. And so he packs such concise, and I understand that it's difficult for most people to read and understand. But take the time and read it 4, 5, 6, 10 times until it starts making sense. And you go, oh my gosh. This is probably one of the most powerful one-page documents out there. If a general power, and this is Madison again, this is the next paragraph, if a general power to construct roads and canals and to improve the navigation of water courses with the train of powers incident thereto be not possessed by Congress. Okay, so what he's saying is if they actually go down and claim that this is a general power to do this and with the powers of incident thereto be not possessed by Congress. In other words, he's saying that you're going to assume a power that is not a power enumerated. He goes on and says, the assent of the states in the mode provided in the bill cannot confer the power. So in other words, if the federal government writes a bill, they're going to usurp powers. And the states actually, the Senate and the House actually go along with it, but they don't formally go out to the states in the mode of an amendment. Madison clearly states that the assent of the states in the mode provided in the bill cannot confer the power. You got to remember, in 1817, they didn't have C-SPAN. Most people had no clue what the heck was going on in Congress. If it wasn't for them writing down these records, and I challenge anybody to go read the annals of Congress during this period, if that's what it is, it may be the Congressional Globe, but go read congressional records of how they debated and talked about creating this bill and sold it amongst their fellow legislatures in both houses. And you'll probably find that there was nobody putting, hey, you know, can we really do this? These men were looking to aggrandize government for a noble purpose, I believe. If you go look at it, I think they'll try to justify with noble intent. They were trying to do something good because Madison put them onto this. Hey, this is something we need to do instead of trying to follow the constitutional process. And so, again, I'm going to repeat this. The assent of the states in the mode provided in the bill cannot confer the power. The only cases in which the consent and secession of particular states can extend the power of Congress are those specified and provided for in the Constitution. What did he just say? The only way that the federal government or the general government can receive the proper consent and assention by the states is through an amendment which is in the Constitution. You got to follow that mode. You have to follow that process. If you don't, you're violating the Constitution. So in the last, and so we're going to actually wrap this up and be able to start on Monroe's veto message. But let me just say this, because this is the last paragraph. I am not unaware of the great importance of roads and canals and the improved navigation of water courses, and that a power in the national legislature to provide for them might be exercised with signal advantage to the general prosperity. He's pointing out, hey, I completely understand this. But seeing that such a power is not expressly given by the Constitution, and believing it cannot be deduced from any part of it without an inadmissible latitude of construction and reliance on insufficient precedents, believing also that the permanent success of the Constitution depends on a definite partition of powers between the general and the state governments, and that no adequate landmarks would be left by the constructive extension of the powers of Congress as proposed in the bill. I have no option but to withhold my signature from it and to cherishing the hope that its beneficial objects may be attained by a resort for the necessary powers to the same wisdom and virtue in the nation, which established which established the Constitution in its actual form and providently marked out in the instrument itself a practicable mode of improving its experience might suggest. In other words, the Article 5 process of amending the Constitution to grant these powers. We will be right back after this for me to summarize and then get ready to dive into Monroe's veto statement.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so I honestly think that when you read this, you'll understand how this really, well, once you get your arms around this, this really helps you change your paradigm. I mean, this one document, even though I kind of read the ratification debates prior to understanding that the Constitution was a contract, I didn't really look at the first time looking at the ratification debates. I didn't look at them as legally defining definitions. It wasn't until, you know, I started reading other documents and you started putting things into context. It wasn't until about 2010, 2011 when I realized, hey, you know, the states have the authority to audit this contract. That's inherent within contract law, because we were being hit by the federal government where I was working, that they were going to audit us over the contract we made with them. And that was at the beginning of the paradigm when, in looking at how the framers, it started making sense, because everybody kept on calling the Constitution as a compact or a contract. Even Hamilton made those mistakes, because Hamilton was trying to straddle that line of ambiguity so that, you know, anything he said couldn't be misconstrued. This, which is why he made very few standing comments during the ratification debates in New York that really made profound impact in contrast to the rest of the Federalists and framers in the other states. Anyway, and I've given you the reasons for all of that, why, you know, he knew that Virginia was going to ratify it, and he knew that if Virginia did, then New York would be, they were not going to be left out, period. They weren't going to be standing by the wayside while this whole new union of states with this new government, not even a Continental Congress, but a brand new government and a new concept of operating government, was going to, you know, start sailing around the world. And anyway, back to what Madison was saying here. Madison clearly states that he, you know, he wants to sign this bill. He understands the importance of this bill. But there's no way anybody having an inkling of understanding, a scintilla, I'll use Obama's crappy language, a scintilla of understanding that the Constitution's a contract and it defined very limited roles, responsibilities, and powers, that this was well outside those powers. That if the federal government was going to create a Department of Transportation, the only way to do that would be for the state governments to actually delegate that power through a constitutional amendment. When one looks at the Constitution, it is very clear that the states are the ultimate sovereigns over it. That's why Article 5 included the state legislatures, not the president, not Congress, not the judicial. The only people who have the ultimate say in what is constitutional, what isn't constitutional, and we covered this actually in the resolutions, is the state government. And so as we kind of close this thing out, Madison basically says he has no option but withholding his signature from it, hoping, cherishing, believing that someday these objects can be obtained by following the constitutional process, or actually the word would be the codified or the systematic process within the Constitution for the federal government to be granted and or delegated these types of powers. And so, my friends, as you can see, what we have today in the Department of Transportation, according to Madison, it requires a constitutional amendment. And because we don't have one, even that, you know, if you look at every single other Department of Energy, there's no way the federal government was ever to, you know, be considered to dictate, you know, what energy we could use and what we couldn't use. There's no way that's enumerated. Housing, there's no way that's enumerated. But when one looks at the Department of Transportation, that just makes sense. And when they tried to do it while the framers were still alive, the framers or these presidents, Madison, Monroe, and Jackson, set three times, they set precedents and saying, no, no, no. You cannot just assume these powers. You must amend the Constitution so that the states will delegate these powers to us. But they didn't. They vetoed these, and Congress failed to go. And at that point, it became, I believe, a matter of principle that Congress believed that they wait out their time, they will eventually be able to. And I believe that was the game plan. I believe that was the playbook that Hamilton handed them. Wait your time and you will be able to start taking and taking for whatever you feel is necessary for the good of the Republic. Well, what ended up happening was it soon changed from the good of the Republic to the good of the globalists and moving us. And that actually started around the Civil War when England was kind of feeling not so powerful. I mean, they were still the world's power. They didn't get knocked off the stage of being the world's power for a while because nobody else could project force. They just knew that they couldn't project enough force to take America anymore. They finally came to the epiphany under Madison's presidency with the Treaty of Ghent. They finally acknowledged that they would have to honor their treaties or suffer the consequences as America continued to grow and be able to project its force. And so Britain, being a pretty smart, one of the most smartest maniacal countries in the world, with a level and a foundation that was unlike any other, because you got to understand, England was one of the only nations in Europe to clung to common law. All the other nations, and even England, the crown, kind of still was trying to cling to civil law because their coronations were done until they isolated themselves. And I truly believe that when they isolated themselves from Rome and said, we are no longer going to be coronated by the Catholic Church, that we take upon ourselves our own church. That was a real pivotal change. And that's where they clung to, and they maintained this movement away from civil law and clinging to common law. And it just so happened that the one nation that would actually replace them as the noble empire of the world actually stood on those exact same standings of common law. These things are not coincidences. These things, I believe the divine hand of providence was directly involved in making sure that these things were happening. And people were either brought up and or inspired or what have you. But let's get into an overview of James Monroe. So James Monroe, who was the secretary for Madison, Secretary of State, and back in those days, the Secretary of State was the most logical because they were already involved in the foreign affairs and so forth, that would become the next president. It wasn't necessarily the vice president, even though James Adams, or John Adams, was Washington's vice president. Everybody just said, okay, well, that's an easy leap. But from this point on, James Madison, who was the Secretary of State of Jefferson, he became the next president. Monroe, the Secretary of State for Madison, became the next president, so forth and so on. And so I think if you look, you know, at the very beginning, it was the Secretary of State, which was the launching pad to become president. And that has shifted into the 20th century to being more of the vice president. And that's because it was less of what they did and more of that direct association and, I believe, the party control. Because once the party controlled the presidency, then they've already got their hooks in the vice president, not some of these other positions. And if you understand anything, it's always about control. Always. That the party is let's just say, loving the control that they possess right now over the country, or the unified parties. Anyway, so Monroe became president, and as a matter of fact, at this point in time, the fruit of Madison and Jefferson's labor came to fruition. They abolished the Federalist Party, because when Monroe got reelected in 1822, or when he got seated in 1822, well, maybe it was 1820. Anyway, I think he was elected, and in 1821 he was seated. That's how it was. And so Monroe himself, in his reelection, was almost unanimously reelected by the electors. In other words, the party that had undeniable power and complete control at this point in time was the Republican Party. And unfortunately, people just, you know, had this admiration for the final framer, because I believe Monroe was the last president of wearing wigs and that type of thing. But bottom line is, Monroe was the one that was the culmination of the Republican Party. And when I say Republican, I mean the real Republican Party, not the one we understand today. The Republican Party that we understand today is one of globalism and big government, and not limited and defined government. Anyway, and we can fix all of that, but we have to take back the party. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic. And we need your help. God bless. And we'll be back with Monroe's words on vetoing the Department of Transportation. God bless.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty.